Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. Headlines on Monday night. Softy and Dick, of course, are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
You're a has-been and a drunk.
Mariners take 2-3 against the Angels over the weekend. They are now 16-13 overall on the year.
Yay!
Starting a three-game series with the Orioles tonight, Eric Swanson versus Dean Kramer. Eric was just recalled this morning. Casey Sadler, by the way, placed on the 10-day IL, and pitcher Brandon Brennan. For all you Brandon Brennan fans out there, I'm sorry, he's gone. He's been claimed on waivers by the Boston Red Sox.
How about some soccer news?
Soccer.
Sounders just smashed the Galaxy 3-0 last night. Jackson still hung over from celebrating. Brad Smith scoring a second straight match, also adding an assist. The Sounders 7 points, good for first in the Western Conference.
I can't breathe.
By the way, did you see all the Manchester United fans that were storming the pitch on Sunday morning?
Crazy.
And did you see Jay Glazer of Fox Sports? Everybody was tweeting him, thinking he was Malcolm Glazer's son.
Oh, God.
And that he owned Manchester United. more baseball. Dodgers starting pitcher Dustin May out for the year after Tommy John surgery.
5 o'clock hour presented by our friends at West Coast Men's Health. Perform the way you used to. Call them right now, 206-312-7008. You can check out westcoastmenshealth.com.
All right, joining us right now on the radio show, here he is, hoping to have a quiet Monday night. Probably got back after a long day at the office, putting a playbook together for the upcoming season. Going to spend some time with his family, and no, a couple of morons from Seattle call and want to know about Dwayne Eskridge, who's playing for the Seahawks right now. So here he is, the head coach at Western Michigan University, Tim Lester, joining us right here on the radio show. Coach, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are great. We appreciate you taking time out from your busy day to do this. We're all fired up for Dwayne. I know you're fired up for Dwayne. Tell the Seahawks fans out there why they should be fired up for Dwayne Eskridge in Seattle.
Well, I think everything with football, especially recently, it's all about explosive plays. You know, you can actually track those statistically and figure out explosive players that are made us on teams. And he's one of the most explosive players that was in the draft this year. And he can take a ball behind the line of scrimmage or a slant pass, or he can just run by and he can throw it over the top. So that part of being a winning football team, that explosive plays part, that's what he specializes in.
And Coach, here's further proof that if you look long enough, you'll find a draft expert that'll say anything about somebody. Because I saw a profile saying he has a seasoned route tree and a profile saying he didn't run a full route tree. So can you help settle that debate and what you had him run?
Well, we had him run everything. I can tell you early on in his career, we had him run goes and posts and comebacks because he was just faster than everybody. You know, and then as he got older, We had him run the whole tree. He really mastered his speed. Believe it or not, he ran a 4.39 at Pro Day, but I think he plays faster than that in pads. He had him run slants, curls, double moves. I mean, but his last year, unfortunately, he got hurt 2 years ago and had a collarbone break on him. But, I mean, he ran the whole tree this year and really just got better at his craft. I mean, I was working today and went down in the weight room, and guess who's in there? D. I mean, that's just do it.
Well, Coach, you think about defensive backs in the NFL, and they're not going to give you a free pass getting off the line of scrimmage. Dwayne is listed at 5'9.5", 190. Talk about that. Talk about will he be able to consistently get off of press coverage and get into that route tree that you talked about?
Yeah, I think that's probably someone asked me the question yesterday on what's the first thing I remember when I met D. Because we've all coached fast, there's plenty of them, but nothing with this much power. I mean, he's 190 pounds easy, and he is a power. That's what makes him so good at the line of scrimmage. One, I know he's quick. He can run by you, he can run around you, but he'll run through you. Someone on Twitter put a video of him blocking. My biggest fear with blocking is that he, you know, was going to go in there and kill the safety and get ejected. I just didn't want him to get ejected because he does everything at one speed. And I had to go in there, but make sure you're low on him. Do not clear his helmet. No, and because he is a physical, strong, powerful athlete, and that's what you need at the line of scrimmage to get off.
Coach, we asked your play-by-play guy, Robin Hook, about an hour ago about the potential that he could have been a first-round guy if he plays 25 games the last 2 years instead of 10. Do you feel like that could have been a possibility?
I do. I mean, his junior year, you know, we moved him to let him play some defense, and we were going to kind of use him right after Road at Michigan, and they were tougher using him both ways, and we were going to use him both ways that year and really kind of let everyone see everything he could do. And unfortunately, that season got, you know, cut short, and so we stuck him to offense this year, and he only got six games. But man, what do you know, six games. I would love to have him for another couple of years, but yeah, looking at the playbook all day today, figuring out how do you score as many points when you don't have a guy that can take any play to the house. And it'll be different for us, but now he's going to be in Seattle.
Does he strike you, and again, Tim Lester is with us, the head coach at Western Michigan, talking about Dwayne Eskridge, who was drafted by the Hawks, 56th overall on Friday. I know he was the Mac Special Teams Player of the Year, but you know that the kickoff, in a lot of ways, has basically been taken out of the game in the NFL. You don't see many guys take kickoffs back, but the Seahawks definitely could use some help on punt returns. Can he be a punt return man for this football team, you think?
He could. I get that question a lot because we didn't have him do it here. I mean, I took the approach the last year, really year and a half, we've been so explosive on offense that our punt return team have pretty much just held up and fair caught everything. It was one of those things that I just want to make sure we got the ball. If they're going to punt it to us, I want it at the end of the play. And so we haven't even really tried to return a punt in 2 years. That's the only reason he hasn't been back there. He has been on kick return, and he's been dynamic as heck on that thing. But he can. I did it on his pro day. I mean, the scouts at the end were like, will you catch some punts? And he's never going to say no. I mean, he's going to go down a punt. You need him to cover on nickel. I mean, he has that attitude that he'll do whatever they ask him to do. He's going to do it, and he's going to do it at full speed. And that's what made him so much fun to coach.
Talk about how you utilized him on fly sweeps, and was he ever used in the backfield?
No, although he's not happy with me still to this day that I never hand ball other than on jet sweeps. And, well, we hand him a couple of reverses too, but he wanted to play in the backfield. He came in as a great running back in high school, and the only reason I think he was a running back in high school is because they didn't have anyone that could throw it to him, and they just wanted him to have it the whole game. But he's naturally a receiver. But he's still, in his heart of hearts, he'd always sneak over there with the running back line and say, "Coach, when are you going to hand me one?" And I said, "I don't need you in the A-gaps. I need you in space." You know, so he never got his way there.
What do you think, honestly, if you're putting your affinity for Dwayne down for a second, which you love the kid, and you should love the kid, and you're just looking at him from an impartial perspective, trying to uncover every rock and look for every possible wart that there could be before you commit, you know, the 56th pick overall in the draft to this kid, what would be an area or two of his game where you would pull Dwayne aside and say, "Look, man, you want to survive long-term in the NFL? You got to get better at what?"
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. You know, the one thing that we would work with him on, I would say if there's anything I would like to see him master, that because he's mastered most things, would just be catching the ball, like the comebacks and the digs when they're above his head. Now, you're going to see some, you know, he got two huge catches that he went up on digs and the ball was 10 feet in the air and went up and caught him. But the only ones I've ever seen him drop, I think I've seen him drop one of the million throws in practice. They were a comeback that was above his head. And so we've been working, you know, with him on it because he's got really, really strong. That's the only thing. Blocking's not going to be an issue. You know, that would probably be the biggest thing, is just the placement of the ball. When you get it, when it's your 5'9" and the guy throws it like you're 6'3", you gotta go up. And if it's almost better if he's being challenged, he's going to catch it. That's the only I've ever seen him get through his hands. And then, of course, he gets angry and he's going to go back and do 20 more, you know. But that would be, if I was really trying to be picky, that would be the one thing that we've been working on. He's got stronger and stronger at everything.
Like it. Well, you obviously helped him, no question, because he was the 1,541st first player out of high school, according to 247, just a three-star guy. So why wasn't he more heralded out of high school?
Well, one, he was a running back. I mean, it's so hard for a school athlete that, you know, you're on a team that doesn't have a quarterback that can really throw it. And if the coach knows what he's doing, which his coach did, they put him at at running back. They didn't throw him the ball at all. So I think the biggest question was, could he catch? Yeah. I don't think there was any questions with him doing the state championship and the 100 he could run. But the question was, you're going to bring the guy in and he's going to be a receiver. Is he going to be able to catch the ball? And he did a great job with that. And I think the biggest thing early on, he was just a straight line fast guy. I had to run every route, and this is 5 years ago, but he tried to run every route at 100 miles an hour. And yeah. So his break points weren't as strong. And when he went, really, what happened, when he went over to defense, and he was our starting corner for 4 games, and he played offense during those games some too, he really learned about patience and using his acceleration to his advantage. And when he came back from the defensive side, he was a whole new player. Not that I didn't think he could get that much better, but all of a sudden, I was just hoping we could get back out there. And he could show the world, you know, the whole route tree instead of just go post comeback, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're hoping to have him on the air with us maybe tomorrow. Tim Lester, again, was Dwayne Eskridge's head coach at Western Michigan in college. So when he comes on the air, you know, we got to rib the guy a little bit. We got to give him a welcome to Seattle moment. So anything we should ask him that would maybe make him squirm a little bit tomorrow?
I would ask. So we had a player that came in with him from Indiana, both from the same state, and they were rivals in high school. They were rivals on our team in college, and there's still an argument on which one's faster. His name is Levante Bellamy.
Okay.
He is one of the running backs for the Denver Broncos now. So he came out last year, and he was a free agent, picked up, and he made the team, and he was on the active roster most of the year last year for the Broncos. So ask him who's faster, or ask him, you heard that Bellamy's faster.
Levante Bellamy. So we're going to say, hey, your head coach told us that Levante, that you're fast, but not as fast as Levante Bellamy.
Oh, don't get me in trouble. I would not take either side of that one because it was, I think one won the state championship their junior year because the other one had a hamstring, a senior, the other had a hamstring. They always run 40s back to back, and it'd be like, you know, 4.38, 4.37, and then the next year it'd be 4.41, 4.4. I mean, they were always a hundredth apart, and they're both in a league that values speed, and they're where they belong. But they definitely have a rivalry going. It's fun.
I love it. Hey, awesome stuff. Congratulations to you as well on getting him drafted so high. That's a feather in your cap for sure, and best of luck. Enjoy watching Dwayne in the NFL. Best of luck at Western Michigan, Coach, and we'll talk down the road.
Thanks, Coach.
I appreciate your time, guys. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Tim Lester, the head coach at Western Michigan University.
He was great.
Some good stuff on Dwayne Eskridge. We'll get a break and chat more about what we heard from the head coach next on Softy and
Dick. And one app.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
All right, 6 o'clock tonight. Alex Grinch, former Wazoo defensive coordinator. Former Ohio State defensive coordinator, current Oklahoma defensive coordinator, will join us at 6 p.m. and talk about Trey Brown, who the Hawks got in the 4th round. We can also ask about Buki Radley Hiles, the new presumably starting nickelback for UW, coming up at 6 p.m. tonight right here on Softy and Dick. You got a crap-eating grin on your face, by the way.
I do. Have you read this article? Have you read this article about DK Metcalf and what he's doing this weekend?
I have, actually. Yeah, yeah.
So DK Metcalf evidently has entered in the 100-meter dash at Sunday's USA Track and Field Golden Games, and it's going to be televised on NBC Sports at 12:30. So if you want to see DK run a 100-meter dash and see how he competes against the fastest in the country... You don't like that idea. Huh?
Well, if he pops a groin or a hamstring, I'm not going to like it.
No.
I mean, to be totally honest with you, I prefer him not to do it. I mean, this is the conversation we had with Russell Okung when he went to Pamplona and ran with the Bulls. Remember that?
Well, yeah, that's running with the Bulls.
I'm not saying this is the same thing. I get it. But is this live this weekend on TV?
It just says it will televise the meet. I don't know if it's live or not.
Who knows? But if it's live... And he gets hurt doing this over the weekend, or even if it's on tape, whatever. I'm just saying if he gets hurt doing this, then I got to ask, the hell are we doing here? I don't know how many times in practice they have wide receivers run the 100-meter, right?
Right. I'm just thinking about, let's compare to some of the other things he could be doing that guys do all the time. For example, NFL players play pickup basketball games all the time.
And most of them aren't supposed to do that either, by the way. It's in their contract. Lots of guys have that in their contract.
Well, obviously, DK got the okay from the Hawks.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not, trust me, I'm not saying he's, that Pete and John said, hey, man, we prefer you not to do this.
You ask me a question about that again, I'm walking out of here.
And he goes out and does it anyway. I mean, isn't there a small part of you that you'll be watching this, and if you think it's live, and I don't know if it is or not, you'll be watching that just crossing your fingers?
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Cross the finish line without blowing your hamstring.
Please. Exactly. And, you know, but the good news is there's still 4 months until the first game of the season, too. So if anything were to be tweaked a little bit, it's not like he's playing next week.
Hey, he's going to rip his groin, whatever. Fine. At least he'll be back for the playoffs.
I think it'd be fun. I'll watch it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Did you see what Joe Klatt did today, by the way?
No.
Fox Sports, our Monday college football guest. Joe Klatt went out today and competed in his local U.S. Open qualifier.
Really?
And I don't know how he did. We got to find that out, by the way.
We can look that up easily.
Well, he put the over-under at 74.5, and he just tweeted way, way over on his Twitter account an hour ago.
So, where was the qualifier? Do you know where the qualifier was? Because I could look it up.
If you look at Joel's Twitter account, there's a video, and in the video he says where he was going to play.
Okay.
So it's not on the tweet itself, but check out Joel's at Joel Klatt, and you'll watch the video tonight, and you'll figure it out. So anyway, good for him. I mean, why not? Go out there and try. Yeah, what the hell?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. We got some sound I want to play from the weekend here for you from the drafting of Dwayne Eskridge. First of all, Dwayne Eskridge himself, the man, the myth, the legend, meeting with the media on Friday night and talked about why he wanted to come play for the Seahawks in particular.
I had a lot of great interviews with pretty much all the staff, you know. So just going through it, they made me feel more comfortable when it comes to being taken care of when I come to Seattle, you know. So I know I could just come there and be able to get better, you know, wouldn't have to worry about too much of the nonsense. You know, I felt that energy directly. So, you know, it's just great to be able to go into something that's already written, you know, because me saying that, you know, I put that energy in the world and obviously it's already been written now that I'm a Seahawk now. So, you know, I'm definitely grateful for it.
Well, I know a lot of people probably hear that and say, well, yeah, of course that's what he's going to say. He got drafted by the Seahawks. But I would retort, we have proof of a text conversation he had with a friend prior to being drafted that he tweeted out and said, I want to go to Seattle more than any other place. Yeah. It's where I felt the most comfortable. So before he knew he was going to be drafted, he did say he wanted to come to Seattle.
You know, I wonder how many players the Seahawks talked to in the pre-draft process. I assume it's a lot, you know, whether combine in normal years or Zoom calls in abnormal years. And I wonder how many of them would walk away from those meetings and say, you know what, I really like the Seahawks. They made me really comfortable. And then they don't get drafted by them because they can't draft everybody.
Right.
My point is, I think Pete Carroll and John Schneider do a great job of making every young guy feel like they are the most important player on their board.
Pete took his shirt off, for God's sake.
Yes, for a second round pick. I mean, Pete's getting naked for a second-round guy. They'll get naked for a top-five guy. He's getting naked for a second-round guy. I mean, hell, even Stone Forsythe, who was a sixth-round pick, I'm sure Stone Forsythe felt like the Seahawks made him feel like he was the most important player in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great, right? When these guys come to Seattle, they want to bust their ass for these dudes. So I would bet you, out of the 32 teams in the NFL, a lot of these guys say the same thing about the Hawks just going through that pre-draft process. And Eskridge, even after Friday, talked about, hey, I'm coming to play wide receiver. And you heard his head coach on with us last segment talking about how playing corner made him a better player. Eskridge himself talked about how playing corner made him a better wide receiver.
It just really slowed the game overall for me. You know, I always, whenever I'm going against a DB, I always think to myself, what could make me uncomfortable if I was going against a corner, if I was going against a receiver of my stature? You know, I always put myself in that example. And then, you know, just thinking of different things that would make me uncomfortable if I was playing corner. you know, that helped me a lot going to the offensive side again in 2020.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we didn't really get into that conversation much with his head coach, but his play-by-play guy, Robin Hook, told us that he played corner because they needed the help on that side of the ball, just like John Ross when he played cornerback at UW. And I always kind of hearken back to, I think it was Earl Thomas that first talked about this, or even Russell Wilson from a defensive perspective, seeing your position from the opposite side of the ball. Right, like Russell would start studying offense from a defensive perspective. Earl would study wide receivers from an offensive perspective to see what they were looking at when it came to his position and then make the necessary adjustments and make the changes. Well, if DeAndre Hopkins looks at me and sees this, or Calvin Johnson looks at me and sees this, I'm going to do that to counter that, right? So I think for him to just get that look at corner, at what corners see when they match up against wide receivers, yeah, I think that's an absolutely invaluable tool.
No question about it. I mean, it totally changes your process of how you approach the line of scrimmage as a wide receiver. And, you know, you mentioned the name John Ross, and I got thinking for a second. It's like, okay, is this guy going to be like a John Ross? But then I thought, how much more does this guy weigh than John Ross?
About 30 pounds.
John Ross was like 160 soaking wet. I mean, this is a different breed of cat right here than John Ross.
Yeah, he's 190 pounds. John Ross is listed right now as 194, but I think he was about a buck 85, buck 80 maybe when he was in college. I know he was lighter than that when he was in high school for sure. But, you know, look, I mean, I also thought it was cool to hear Lester talk about the route tree, that when he first showed up here, all he was doing was just running goes and posts and comebacks because the guy was too fast for everybody. So you don't think of a guy at 5'9" taking the top off a defense. This guy apparently is that kind of player. So you got three players now on this roster in Lockett, Metcalf, and Eskridge who are all fast as hell, all three of them. And all three of them can get downfield. All three of them can stress a defense. And let's go to 23. Pete Carroll talked about that Friday, about having all these speedy wide receivers on the roster playing at one time.
The dynamics of his speed, the speed factor, the track background, that's attractive. You know, we want to make sure that our guys are big threats. All our guys run 4.3s, you know, and Tyler and DK both run low 4.3s, you know, and so to have another element in there with that kind of speed concerns that, you know, you provide for the opponent, that's part of this thinking, you know. But we're looking for well-rounded guys that fit and can complement too. We'll have the ability to, like DK can move all over the place now. He's learned enough in his couple years to do that. We use Tyler in and out of the slot, and we would like that versatility from any of the guys that come on the field. So, you know, when Wayne gets his shot, you know, we'll use all of that hopefully, and then mix and match and kind of hide it and disguise it as we want to, and we'll see how that works. But it is all part of it, you know, that the guys have elements that do complement, and of course, you know, you can't replace the speed, and so, you know, we kind of started there.
We can see him on go routes and deep over routes and catching balls over the top, but what don't we have in the two wide receivers that we have right now? We don't have that fly sweep ability. We don't have that just throw it out there and get the ball in his hands within 5 yards from the line of scrimmage. DK and Tyler just don't do that, period. I'm not saying that they can't. They just don't. And we see on film this guy do that. So I think the immediate upgrade to the Seahawk offense with this guy is going to be between behind the line of scrimmage and 5 yards from the line of scrimmage, where Russell Wilson just gets the ball out of his hands and lets this guy go.
Well, we've seen Lockett run fly sweeps before. He ran one against the Panthers for a 75-yard touchdown like 4 years ago. And I'm with you. I just don't know why we don't see it more often. I mean, the guy's got 4.4 speed.
Does he still?
Well, he did, and even then he wasn't running it very often. I agree with you. He's probably slower now than he was 5 years ago, for sure. I mean, he's older, duh, right? But he's never been that guy. Why have they never taken advantage of that with the guy here? Every now and then he'll run it, but not nearly as much as I think they should have.
No, absolutely. And maybe part of it might have been the coordinators. I mean, part of it might be, hey, it's not in Bevel's nature. It's not in Shoddy's nature. We know it's in Shane Waldron's nature.
Yeah,
I mean, Shane Waldron comes from a system that runs motion in the backfield with wide receivers all the time. So I'm excited to see how they use this guy and how often they get him the ball. Hell, get him the ball in the backfield. We just talked to Coach Lester about it. Get him the ball in the backfield. Pitch it to him. See what he can do on an end around.
I think eventually not using Lockett that way falls on the shoulders of the head coach. And I totally get what you're saying, that you turn the offense over to a guy, you let him go, whatever. But it doesn't take a freaking genius to realize that Tyler Lockett can get around the corner against anybody in the NFL with 4.4 speed. And why Pete Carroll, and this is what we're talking about, right? Maybe this is now what we're seeing with, all right, we've been asking him to evolve. We've been asking him to adapt. Maybe now he's just finally starting to do that. Better late than never. We'll see what it means on game day. But if they are planning on using that type of speed and maybe getting into situations like that, that would be a little bit of a difference than what we've seen the last maybe 8 or 9 years out of this offense. John Schneider also talked after the drafting of Eskridge and gave his just initial thoughts on the speedy wideout from Western Michigan.
Knowing the person, the competitor, and who he is, family makeup, everything. And, so overall, just, you know, extremely explosive, 5'9", 190-something, 4'3", whatever, 6'9", 10'5", you know, 100 meters in high school, 21... 200 meters, just really explosive guy, can throttle his speed, tough. We're getting a guy that could play a number of different positions, and is a kickoff returner, could be a gunner. There's a really cool shot of him as a gunner against Central Michigan, where he, you know, just throttles somebody, and we're getting a guy that's competitive, hungry, intense.
I want to see him on punts. I was curious to see
coverage or return.
Return. I was curious to hear Lester say that the scouts wanted him at Pro Day to catch a few punts because he never did it in college because they fair caught everything.
Well, sounds like another team, you know. Fair catches everything. So you just talked about Pete Carroll adapting. Is that another way that Pete Carroll is going to choose to adapt? Is he going to put a rookie back there? And knowing that Pete hyperventilates when the punt is in the air, because all he wants is a hand above his head and a catch. That's why he's got David Moore back there all the time.
Right.
Is he going to let an electric guy actually return some punts?
Well, last year it was David Moore and DJ Reed at punt return.
Reed did okay.
Yeah.
But then he fumbled one of the playoffs.
Exactly. If your wide receiver number three is going to be your punt guy, I'd feel more comfortable putting him back there than Tyler Lockett. That's for sure, because Lockett's your number one guy and is making a gazillion dollars a game. So, I mean, why not? You know, let's see what happens in the camp and in the preseason. But I think with the kickoff being, how many touchdowns? You had the stat, I think, on the show the other day. The amount of touchdowns.
Stats are for losers.
That have been returned on kickoffs in the last couple years versus like 10 years ago has dropped dramatically.
It has. I believe it was either 6 or 7. I've got the 10 years ago one. I believe it was 6 or 7 that were returned for touchdowns this last year. I just went to randomly to 2010, which happens to be the year that Leon Washington returned three for the Seahawks.
Yes.
So think about that. Leon Washington in 2010 returned half as many for touchdowns as the NFL did this year. There's about 21, 22, just a quick count here, touchdowns in 2010. It's gone down almost fourfold in a decade.
Well, it's gone down 75%. I mean, it's ridiculous how much it's dropped. So you want to take advantage of a guy's speed. And look, I realize that it's easier to get into a stride on a kickoff return. There's more room to run, for example, and maybe they'll let him take more out, but it's just not a factor. There's so many kickers that are kicking the ball through the end zone, it's impossible to return kicks now. His head coach, by the way, Dwayne Eskridge, was on with us last segment, and Tim Lester, and talked about if he wants to survive in the NFL, what does he really have to get better at? Here's what his head coach said.
Catching the ball, like the comebacks and the digs when they're above his head. Now, you're going to see some, you know, he got two huge catches that he went up on digs and the ball was 10 feet in the air and went up and caught him. But the only ones I've ever seen him drop, I think I've seen him drop one of the million throws in practice. They were a comeback that was above his head. And so we've been working, you know, with Amana, because he's got really, really strong. That's the only thing. Blocking's not going to be an issue. Route running, the biggest thing is just the placement of the ball. When you get it, when it's you're 5'9" and the guy throws it like you're 6'3", you gotta go up. It's almost better if he's being challenged, he's going to catch it.
That seems like a really detail-y thing, doesn't it? Like, if that's the number one thing on his to-do list is, hey, comebacks that are thrown over your head, that's what you got to work on. That's a pretty good starting spot for me for a rookie wide receiver.
I just think this table is set for him to come in from game one, be the kickoff returner, maybe even be the punt returner, be the third wide receiver who's on the field. You know, he's probably on the field two-thirds of the snaps, almost more than half the snaps, along with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. And the fact that you could find a guy like that in the second round is very, very exciting.
Let's do this. We'll get a break. Alex Grinch is the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma, the former Cougar defensive coordinator. He'll join us at 6 p.m. and talk about Trey Brown right here on Softie and
Dick. It's freezes.
Now back to Softie and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR.
I want to give a special shout out to Brett Jacobson. You know who Brett Jacobson is? Any idea?
I know he talks to me a lot on Twitter. I know that.
Very active on Twitter.
Very active.
Yeah, almost annoying, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's not very nice.
Brett Jacobson was the GM of the Tennessee Titans in our mock draft on Wednesday and nailed the pick of Caleb Farley at number 22. Now, there's two other guys that also had the right pick. One of them was Trevor Lawrence to the Jaguars, and the other is Zach Wilson to the Jets.
Doesn't count.
Okay, those don't count.
So Brett's wins the award. What does he get, a Cupid doll?
He gets whatever he wants. He gets to interact with Dick Fain on Twitter. So basically, out of the 30 eligible general managers, right, we were 1 for 30 in our mock draft.
And do you, which is probably par for the course for most mock drafts, but do you happen to remember what Hugh said about Brett Jacobson's pick?
I don't. Do you?
I don't either. I'm trying to remember. I know it wasn't one that he, I don't think he panned it, and I don't think it was one of his top three or four either. So it was just kind of one of those that probably landed about where he thought it was going to land.
Dick, he didn't like it.
He did not like it?
He did not like it. He was talking about Greg Newsome, the other cornerback from Northwestern, being better.
Like he ripped the guy for taking Billy Price a couple years ago.
And the Eagles took Billy Price.
And I think it was the Bengals or Philadelphia who took Billy Price.
Oh, Bengals. Yeah,
Bengals. Yep. Bengals took Billy Price. So if Millen rips you, and by the way, Billy Price, I think, has been a bust in the NFL. If Millen rips you, then there's a reason why he's ripping you, because that guy's going to be a bum. So I guess Caleb Farley's career is over before it starts. How about Quincy Pondexter getting hired by Mike Hopkins? He's got a couple of ex-players now, and Will Conroy and Quincy Pondexter. I had no idea that Coupon wanted to get involved in coaching. I'll just say this. It's a lot of work, and I guarantee for Quincy Pondexter, it's the first full-time job the guy's had in his life, for crying out loud. He's going to work a lot of hours, but if Quincy Pondexter wants to be a head coach down the road, which he absolutely has the personality to be, there's no question about that, this is a great way to start that career.
It does. I can just envision Quincy Pondexter in living rooms when they're actually able to go back into living rooms. And he is the perfect. Just if you just thought about all the great Huskies over the last 20 years, and he would be on the short list of guys that I would most want in somebody's living room promoting the program.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, you think about all the guys that have played over at UW, the great players that have come through here, and also have that great kind of command of a room. Brandon Roy has great command of a room. Quincy Pondexter has great command. Isaiah Thomas could have great command. I'm telling you right now, there are a handful of guys that have played here in the last decade that I could absolutely in the next decade see being the head coach at UW, for sure. And Coupon's one of them. Totally.
Yeah. I mean, he'd have to go. I would hope that he would go the route of being a head coach someplace else first. But And just knowing enough of it as we do about him, you have to imagine. He made $21.6 million in his career.
Right.
Which isn't a ton for the NBA, but that's a ton for us normal folks, right? So you would imagine that he took care of that money, and it's not something he has to do for the rest of his life, but, you know, this is great for Washington, Washington program.
Well, we're going to have him on at some point. We'll ask him what his aspirations are. I'm assuming he's got aspirations to be a head coach down the road. I mean, why was Brandon Roy coaching high school basketball because he wants to be a head coach, right? All these guys got to pay their dues. And Romar paid his dues at Pepperdine and came to UW after that. All right, 5:53, we're going to break. Alex Grinch, Trey Brown's defensive coordinator, will join us.
Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, boys and girls, headlines on Sophie and Dick on a Monday night are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
We got games in the NBA as we speak. Magically, the Pistons 105-91. The Warriors in the Avengers game lead the Pelicans 66-54 at the half, behind 21 already from Steph Curry. Hawks up on the Blazers 58-54. Late second quarter, Lillard's got 12 for the Blazers as we speak.
I'll have to ask how many Marvel points Steph Curry has scored, because I have an 11-year-old that was locked into that game when I went upstairs. Seahawks have declined the fifth-year option on running back Rashad Penny, which would have guaranteed him $6.5 million over the next two seasons. Falcons exercising the fifth-year option on Calvin Ridley, and the Bills do the same on Pro Bowl quarterback Josh Allen.
How about this? Malik McDowell's back in the NFL, signing a one-year contract with the Cleveland Browns, and the Dodgers have lost starting pitcher Dustin May for the rest of the year with Tommy John surgery. Denver and Lakers tonight, by the way, coming up at 7 o'clock. LeBron James will not play. Lakers have lost 6 out of 7. LeBron is out to rest his ankle. Joining us right now on the air, former defensive coordinator at Washington State, here to talk about Trey Brown from Oklahoma, a guy who could not get the Apple Cup done, but he's producing big-time talent in Norman. Alex Grinch, how are you, pal? What's going on?
Yeah, we never cracked that code in our time out there.
You know what? You're doing some great things in Oklahoma, man, for sure. But Trey Brown, cornerback, picked up in the fourth round by the Seahawks over the weekend. When you hear the name Trey Brown, what are the first maybe memories, thoughts that kind of pop into your head?
Yeah, I think from an attribute standpoint, he has speed, and it's both in track spikes, and it's also displayed on the football field. So the film, kind of confirms, what you see at a pro day, which sometimes that's not always the case with guys. From an attribute standpoint, I mentioned that, and I think, for us, at the stage that we play on, not dissimilar to those programs that you mentioned in the state of Washington, the lights are bright. You're going to play in some rivalry games. We play one down in Texas at the Cotton Bowl, 4 overtimes. Someone has to make a play, and Trey Brown, makes it to win us a football game. It's thumbs up or thumbs down at that point. There is no in between. Someone is going to have to, ultimately, be the guy that does that for you on one side of the bar or the other. And Trey did that for us. And you fast forward to the Big 12 championship this year down at Cowboy Stadium in Dallas. It's a 2-minute drive for the opponent. And in that moment, same thing. They're going to make a play. We're going to make a play to secure victory. And Trey Brown comes up with another interception. So has made some really big plays in his time here at an elite level of college football.
Coach, Trey said in his press conference that he had a coach that told him, if you aren't getting penalties, you aren't being aggressive enough. And he says he thinks he took it a little too literally. Was that coach you, or was it the DB's coach? And will that be difficult to coach out of him?
Well, it's certainly top down, so I'll take credit for it. Mm. I think what it amounts to, as much as anything, is we have the tagline, passive is a myth. And the idea that if you just stay on top of a guy, all things are going to be positive at the end of the down. And oftentimes that's not the case. Whether you're sitting there watching guys catch footballs on you, or you do nothing to impede the receiver's ability to run the route that was drawn up by the coordinator on the board. And so, yep. In our system, Trey was asked essentially to be on an island. He had to play the number one receiver to his side and do so in a press man situation. Not 100% of the time, but that would be the bulk of his reps, which I think is great evaluatable film for those NFL teams to see him to be put in those situations and hold up very well. But part of that, if you're going to get in another man's face, you got to be prepared to put hands on him. And that's just the reality of it. And so, certainly I think that, the aggressive approach is the right approach. Certainly I'll also say that the punitive damage that goes along with it is not the same in the NFL ranks as it is here. There's a little bit more at stake when you get that flag. So I do think it's teachable. And then the biggest thing is, you know, early in the down with his elite quickness and his long speed laid the down, I think to use hands at the line of scrimmage will be a critical piece for his success.
Yeah, it's a 4.440 guy, and you mentioned a lot there that reminds me of the Seahawks system in your description of Trey Brown. Coach, and again, Alex Grinch, former Wazoo defensive coordinator, now the D.C. at Oklahoma, is with us on the air. We're talking about Trey Brown, who the Hawks got in the fourth round over the weekend. Maybe go into further detail, Alex, and talk more about why you think he's a great fit for this particular system in Seattle.
Well, and that's the system, you know, myself, like so many, you know, the consistency in terms of the results they've had so over the course of a number of years, you know, that film goes on each week, you know, watching the Seahawks and, you know, watching what Coach Carroll does with his defensive staff. And so not to claim by any stretch of imagination I'm an expert on it, but in the same token have some knowledge in terms of what they ask their guys to do. And I think, you know, the multiplicity that way, you know, and some of the cover three stuff, the ability to play an outside third, but do so from the line of scrimmage. And that's a difficult trait for some, you know, some individuals, and also obviously the, you know, in certain situations, more so than not to play man coverage. And when you can play man, it really opens up a lot of the things that you do from a defensive standpoint that you have to cross off if you can't. And so I think this is a guy that I would suggest that they saw on film, one that holds up in that area very well, but has played some elite receivers in the college ranks. Obviously, the speed and all those things, and the balls come a little bit different up at that level, and so it's like anything, all these young pros, there's an adjustment that has to take place. But no, I think they see a guy that, like you said, can play on that island and do a lot of the things that they've been so successful with.
I saw an amazing stat, which is a testament to your program and a testament to the type of schedule you play in the regular season and the postseason. He has played with or against 9 of the last 13 first-round draft pick wide receivers. I mean, that is unbelievable. So how has he performed against those elite of the elite, and was there a type that he fared against better and a type that maybe he struggled against more?
Yeah, I don't think it would be as simple as to say thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, based on a specific individual. You know, I do think that, you know, the tape would show, you know, and in some of those instances, I think back to LSU 2 years ago, which you know, we struggled mightily. So did everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Against that group. But if, you know, that's a real good one against Jamar Chase, the bulk of that game, and you see a guy that you know, holds up very well. That this one that you know, of all our issues, you wouldn't circle Trey Brown that night. And give him a lot of credit for that. But, you know, I just think for a guy, when you have the short area quickness to put yourself in, you know, a good position early in the down, so at the snap of the football, he has that. And then he also possesses the long speed to put yourself in a positive situation as the down progresses. It gives you the best chance to be successful.
Yep.
When the ball is in the air. And so in all those situations, you know, the skill set may change wide receiver wise. You know, some are the shorter, quicker guys, some are the taller guys, but has the ability again to you know, run with the guy that's trying to blow the top off, and also the agility and quickness to being a positive situation against the make you miss type of wideout.
Well, Alex Grinch again is with us, the defensive coordinator for Oklahoma. You mentioned LSU, and I'll just say this, that you spanked Florida good this year in a Cotton Bowl. You got 3 picks off Kyle Trask, who the Buccaneers think could be the next Tom Brady down there in Tampa Bay. So obviously you're doing something right down there, because the numbers overall for the Big 12, when we think of elite college defense by conference, the Big 12 is not one that we think of a lot. How difficult is it, honestly, and maybe this is even a testament to Trey, how difficult is it to play defense in that conference against those offenses week in and week out?
You know, it's not completely dissimilar, you know, going back to, you know, I mentioned Washington State, and kind of bring up, you know, if you go back To our initial time there, you're talking about 2015. You think about the quarterbacks that were, you know, the Jared Goffs of the world in that conference. You think about the offense and what Oregon, and obviously a more pro style offense at UW. And so in so many ways, not completely dissimilar when at a place like in Oklahoma in the Big 12, where it just seems like week in and week out, you're going to be challenged that way. And you know, by the way, again, going back to the Pacific Northwest and talking about, you know, like a Stanford, again, I go back to and been gone just a couple of years now. But, you know, it you couldn't possibly play defense in the Pac-12. And obviously there's certain programs that disproved it. And we tried, and like you said, we didn't do a very good job against Washington. But had pretty good success against, you know, the rest of that conference, even at a Washington State. So for us here, that a lot of that, and the only reason I bring that up is, you know, our confidence level when we took over to Oklahoma was just that. It was, you know, if you can do it there, is there enough same as to give us a chance to be successful? And when it was specific to Trey, you know, they don't run you over if they can run by you. And so what you find out is a guy that can make plays in space. And so much of the game is played that way. Trey has that speed. He has that quickness, like I mentioned, the willingness to be physical as well. And so in an open style of play that, by the way, the entire country kind of faces now, you know, guys like that are at a premium.
Coach, in August, you said a year ago he wasn't a leader by example. He had his good days, but he was too willing to just have a bad day. But all of a sudden, you're seeing a guy with just a work ethic and a want to. Why did that change happen?
Yeah, I think, you know, that would be a quote I could probably say for about, you know, 75% of the roster as they transition from a young guy to an older guy. But I would say it paints a completely accurate picture of Trey Brown. And part of that is, you know, this is an elite program at the University of Oklahoma, and historically and in recent years was not playing an elite level of defense. And so, you know, the room that he walked into, specifically the defensive back room, was one that, you know, he found his way at the top of the depth chart very quickly. And it's not because you had to beat out seven guys or eight guys. Yeah. You know, it's because you possess those skill sets that we've already mentioned. And so, you know, regardless of your performance that particular day, you're going to find, you know, there's a pretty good chance the depth chart's not going to change in the next one. And so a lot of that is understanding, okay, what's your bar? And as a young guy, that's okay to have that bar. It's not ideal, but it's probably okay to have that bar because, you know, you're trying to, there's so much from a learning standpoint and maturing standpoint that goes along with it.
Yeah.
But as you transition to an older guy in a program, if you're willing to raise that bar, and I'm talking obviously, you know, as a defense or as a program, we're trying to do that as well. But just, you know, specific to Trey, is are you going to do the things necessary to raise a bar that's not created by a teammate, is pushing you from a depth standpoint, and that was a transition for him, and one that he did. I give him a lot of credit. We're on this phone call right now because he did that.
Yeah.
The stakes go up obviously at the next level. You know, I think a guy that goes with a completely different mindset than 2 years ago. Just being okay, being a starter. Now he's going to have to fight for it, and I think he has the right mindset to do that.
Well, he made, Coach, before you go, Alex Grinch again with us, Oklahoma D.C., former Cougar defensive coordinator. Trey Brown in some ways made Seahawk history because he became the first corner drafted by the Schneider-Carroll era that does not have 32-inch arms. So he's at, I believe, 30 3/8. So they changed their philosophy just for this guy. So it kind of shows you in some ways what they think of him. But, Alex, before you go, we appreciate you doing this. We mentioned at the top that we're both dog fans, all right? And I do want to bring up a Husky-related topic, but I promise you it has nothing to do with the Apple Cup and your time in Pullman, okay? We got a defensive back in Seattle who you know very well. Bukie Radley-Hiles is now in the Husky secondary, and he was with you for the last couple of years. Tell us about Brendan and what this kid brings to Montlake.
Well, and there's not a better person. He's played, you know, again, on the same stages that I just mentioned, you know, at a place like in Oklahoma. You're talking about playoff games. You're talking about, conference championship games. In my time here, you know, started, darn near every single one of those games for us, played well. He is smart. He's instinctive. Did I mention he was a good kid? Yeah. I can't say that enough. He is a guy that, wanted to get back on the West Coast, a guy that we're rooting for. I don't have a negative thing to say about him. And obviously I think he went to, a great program and what Coach Lake does and the success that they've had on defense.
Yep.
There's no reason to not think it won't be a great fit.
Do you know more about why he transferred, by the way?
Oh, those are, individual decisions that guys make. I know he got a great landing spot, and so I'll root from afar.
Gotcha. Alex Grinch, great stuff. Appreciate this. Best of luck down the road, and I know you'll be keeping an eye on Trey Brown here in Seattle, man. Appreciate you doing this, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, thanks, guys.
You bet. Alex Grinch with us. We're going to break and find out about the first Seahawk draft pick, Robin Hook. They call him the captain, play-by-play voice of Western Michigan football. Talking about Dwayne Eskridge next, right here on Soft.